Lance Olson, Scott Girard, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. I'm here in South Carolina on the campus of Coastal Carolina. It's the Myrtle Beach Invitational as Utah State picked up a win earlier today. Hans is back in our studios in Salt Lake City, and joining us on the Smart Ring guest line is one of our favorites from Athlon Sports and college football and NFL writer Brian Fisher, kind enough to join us. Brian, how are you?
Hey, Brian.
Doing well. Good to be on with you guys again.
Yeah, good to catch up with you. First off, let's start with the college football ranks. Big one at Rice-Eccles coming up tomorrow. Utah squares off against Oregon. How do you think this plays out? Because obviously if Utah wins this thing, they'll clamp the they'll have a stranglehold on that South Division.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is definitely a matchup that we're probably going to see twice in the next 3 weeks. I mean, that is just how everything has been shaping up, you know, regardless of the outcome on Saturday. And a terrific match, terrific showcase, really, for the Pac-12 and what both of these teams can really do. I think this is going to be very intriguing. You got guys like Kayvon Thibodeau, who's I think obviously in a lot of awards, you know, talk with the end of the year coming up, and an Oregon team that is firmly in the mix of the college football playoff. And I think this is going to come down to, you know, really which side can stop the run. You know, I think that is going to be key in this one, is which side you know, really can force the other team to kind of be one-dimensional. I think we've seen at times, you know, there's been success in that with previous opponents, and whichever defense really steps up, I think is going to control this game that way.
How impressed are you with Oregon starting quarterback Anthony Brown?
You know, he's been hot and cold. You know, I think at the beginning of the year, I think the offense was a little slow. And I think, obviously, that the hiccups against Stanford and whatnot, I think you can lay a lot of that on the fact that, you know, Joel Moorhead was out there, and you have a new play caller coming in. And he really kind of had to shoulder a lot of stuff on his two shoulders. And, you know, he's come out with flying colors. I think he's been able to get better each week as a passer. And, you know, the extra dimension that he had, you know, as a runner, you have to account for an extra guy in the box. You know, I think that's been a big part of their run game, you know, with what they're able to do. And he's steadily improved. I don't think he's not necessarily, you know, the all Pac-12 quarterback or one of the top tier guys necessarily even out west. But I think he's slowly but surely gotten better each week. And the underlying tools are there to be a very good college quarterback. And I think you're starting to see more and more, you know, why I think a lot of folks around Eugene and truthfully around the country are liked what he brought in terms of the physical, you know, tool set.
Do you consider Oregon a college football playoff team, caliber team?
I think so. I mean, they've obviously proven at the highest of levels that they can compete with the national powers. You know, I think that is important to note, because, you know, you're going to end up playing a Georgia, an Alabama, you know, some, you know, those type of teams. And being able to prove that you can beat an Ohio State on the road without your best player, without one of the best players in the country, I think that, you know, speaks volume to what Oregon has done. And, you know, truthfully, what's a little bit different for the Ducks this year compared to, you know, really past Pac-12 playoff contenders is just how well they're stocked up front. You know, I think the offensive and defensive line, you know, are very good units. They play together. They've really grown as the year has gone on. And, you know, that's been a tremendous help. That really kind of is a separator, you know, much more so than the skill talent positions that we're used to kind of seeing out of these Pac-12 teams that are CFP contenders. You know, the Ducks have the hosses up front. And I think that is an important distinction when you're talking about going up against some of those teams from across the country. And, you know, in the back of my mind, the only thing that really kind of holds Oregon back is really just consistency. You know, we just have not seen four full quarters out of the Ducks this year. Maybe it happens this weekend and Saturday. I know a lot of your listeners there in Salt Lake don't want that to happen, but that has really been the one kind of thing that makes everybody hesitant about Oregon, is that we have not seen four quarters of dominance out of a team that should be dominating a lot of their opposing competition. And truthfully, that's the next step for Mario Cristobal and his team, is to have that one true dominant performance. Because we've seen bits and pieces, we've seen two or three quarters, we've seen some runs, but in terms of four full quarters, I think that's still left on the table for the Ducks.
Brian, I was wondering how bad a single loss in a single game can hurt a team, because if it can, Stanford has not won a game since they beat Oregon. They are 0-5 since they beat Oregon, and they continue to sink. And what Utah did to Stanford was, frankly, it was embarrassing how badly they beat Stanford in every area on the field. How bad will that Stanford loss end up hurting Oregon in the final voting?
You know, I think so far the committee has really not held it against the Ducks. You know, I think that's been one of the bigger surprises in my mind is they really their resume really kind of rests on that trip to Columbus. And the committee chair, Gary Barta, has referenced that time after time. That definitely is really a huge feather in their cap. I mean, that's really the best win out of anybody in the country. You know, you could maybe split hairs with what Cincinnati has in terms of that road win at Notre Dame. But, to me, everybody is certainly focused on that Ohio State game, less so than that Stanford loss. And look, there were mitigating circumstances. You know, they were missing an offensive lineman in that game. Obviously, you have Joe Moorhead going out the day of the game, going to the hospital. You know, how the effect that has, especially given he's the primary play caller on offense, I think you could kind of see it in that performance. And let's face it, that really the end of that game going into overtime was really the issues that I think a lot of people have with Oregon this year as a team. They just were not able to fully put away teams. It ended up costing them. They were in control of that game for most of the afternoon and until the end, very end right there. And so, they had some bad penalties go against their way. And, you know, frankly, the committee has not held it against them. Stanford is not a good team, but I think Oregon has so far kind of survived that. Now, you know, when we're splitting hairs with maybe an undefeated Cincinnati and some others down at the end of the year, maybe things will change, and that Stanford loss will become more a prominent part of Oregon's resume. But so far, so good for the Ducks.
So Cincinnati is probably going to be on the outside looking in, even if they do run the table. And I, you know, as much as I'd like to stick up for the G5, I can understand the eyeball test, even though they're going to probably run the table. Hasn't been great at times. Do you agree with that in terms of Cincinnati probably not deserving a top four spot?
Yeah, I mean, I think you go back to last year's team, and the second half of the year, they kind of flipped a switch, and they started blowing out opponents and really looking like one of the better teams, you know, in the country to where that conversation could be had. That has not been the case this year. And, you know, truthfully, injuries have impacted this team. You know, it looks, you know, the depth at group of five contenders like this is certainly not what you're going to see at Ohio State or any of these kind of powers that we're regularly talking about atop the CFP rankings. And Cincinnati's kind of been bit by that. They are not as good a team at this point as they were last year. And I think that's shown up in a lot of these close wins. And the offense has not taken off. You kind of thought it was going to, kind of going back to mid-October. They blew out Temple. They blew out UCF. And it looked like they kind of were turning that corner. And so far, it's been a regression. Now, the defense is still very good. It's really definitely saved them the last couple of weeks, even though they've given up a few big plays here or there. But I think on the whole, this is a very good football team. But I think the questions about this being a great football team are pretty accurate. They just have not shown that they have been that top-tier unit. And I think, frankly, they're kind of lucky to sit there at number five, because I think if you were to give a lot of truth serum and take out resumes and take out that 10-0 record, a lot of people would say, they should be a little bit lower on the pecking order just based on what we've seen between the lines.
Another undefeated group of five team, UTSA standing 10-0, have Alabama, Birmingham, and UNT to finish this season. They should absolutely beat them and finish 12-0. BYU is currently locked into the Independence Bowl. They're going to be taking on a Conference USA team in that Independence Bowl. So probably looking at a 12-0 matchup. We'll assume BYU wins their next two games, beats USC, beats Georgia Southern. Brian, what is the best-case scenario for BYU at the end of this season in bowl projections? Is it UTSA at a 12-0 in the Independence Bowl?
Probably. I mean, again, I think we've discussed it on this show, just in terms of the horse trading that goes on, especially amongst those ESPN owned and operated bowls. And I think that is the kind of the great unknown. When you talk with folks in the bowl industry, yeah, they have their short list and teams, but ultimately these are TV products. ESPN will get involved, and I think they're going to try to set up the best matchup. And certainly, if UTSA makes it undefeated, I think that is definitely an intriguing matchup. You have a national power in BYU that's in the top 15. This would obviously be probably a top 15, top 20 type of ranked bowl game. And those don't really come along too often, given some of the mismatches that we see in terms of the alignment on the bowl postseason. So I think it might be in Shreveport. It might be somewhere else. But I think, you know, UTSA would make for an attractive candidate to play BYU. But I will pick your bone a little bit, just because this UAB game coming up this weekend, that is no given. I think with the way the Blazers and Bill Clark can design a defense, especially coming after a close call that UTSA had last week against a very bad Southern Miss team. I think that could be one of the more intriguing games of the weekend, is UTSA trying to keep on to that undefeated record against UAB.
You buy in San Diego State, and the reason I bring it up is if they run the table, they'll host the conference championship game. But if they lose a game and they've got Boise State at the last game of the season, then Utah State, if they're able to run the table and they've got Wyoming and New Mexico left, then the Aggies could host the Mountain West Conference championship game. So where are you at on San Diego State? Do you feel like they'll be able to win these last two games?
I think they got a really good shot. And the only issue with San Diego State is just that kind of nice edge that they kind of play their games with, because the offense is really not great. You know, they have relied at times on some big plays here or there to get past some of their wins. But it's defense and Matt Ariaza punting. You know, that is what this team is made of. And it's definitely proven to be a successful formula. But I think they do have the edge there at the end of the year against Boise State. But as we've seen, the Broncos have some talent. You know, they're perfectly capable of winning that game, given how these two have played in the past. And I think San Diego State certainly is still the favorite in the Mountain West, but it's going to be a fun few weeks, you know, out west. I think that really the Pac-12 race is kind of put to bed a little bit, given some of the division leads that we've seen in both sides based on this weekend. But the Mountain West, I tell you what, on both sides of the kind of bracket there, some intriguing matchups down the stretch here. With San Diego State really in that driver's seat, because, you know, if Cincinnati slips up, you know, maybe San Diego State can slip up in there ahead of them in rankings, because they would have a very good win, especially if Utah were able to kind of run the table and win the Pac-12. That's a pretty big feather in San Diego State's cap if they were to end up beating the Pac-12 champions.
Brian, where would your Heisman vote go right now?
Oh, you know what? I was asked to do a couple of, you know, short lists and whatnot this year, and it's kind of all over the place. I really don't feel like there's anybody that's kind of taken this and run with it. You know, usually by this time we've had a quarterback emerge, we've had either a running back emerge. I do think Kenneth Walker III, you know, depending on what happens this weekend, this could be a huge weekend in terms of that Heisman race. If Kenneth Walker III goes wild on Ohio State, even if they don't, Michigan State really doesn't even win the game, if he can go for, you know, 150, 200 yards on Ohio State with all the national attention on that game, it might be his to lose. You know, I think that might be where Kenneth Walker's candidacy is right now. He's been that outstanding at running back, but I feel like the field is as wide open as it has ever been. You know, you're talking about defensive players getting a lot of votes. I think Will Anderson out of Alabama is going to get a lot of press. You got Jordan Davis at Georgia. I think there's going to be a lot of fringe candidates get votes, and it wouldn't surprise me at all when we have the Heisman announcement on that Saturday in December, that when you see the list of ultimate vote getters, that it's as long as it ever has been, because I think everybody across the country really does not have that kind of one candidate that the momentum is gathering around, and maybe this weekend changes that. I think that is kind of adding to the intrigue of this week.
Hey, I'll never disparage anybody for going out and making money, and you're always worth what somebody's willing to pay you. But Mel Tucker at nearly $10 million a year, really? I have a hard time wrapping my brain around that.
I do too, and I guess, you know, market forces are going to be market forces. But, you know, kudos to Michigan State for stepping up. You know, I think they understand what they have, and you know, truthfully, I think Mel Tucker – it's been better than his record suggests. You know, I think he's taken over two teams that were in need of turnarounds, and he's gotten them able to play in the big time games. And that's ultimately, if you're Michigan State, that's what you want. You know, 16-13 overall record doesn't necessarily look great when you're talking about those type of figures. But with the influx of television money that the Big Ten is going, this is going to be a drop in the bucket. And I think the bigger question in my mind is ultimately, you know, what does Mel want to do? He is more of a Midwest guy, you know, and you know, he grew up in Big 12 country, Big Ten country, and played at Wisconsin. You know, he's coached with the Bears. You know, he's been in that part of the country for a long time. At the same time, he knows what is out there with LSU, with certainly USC, maybe Florida coming open. You know, those are jobs that you can walk in and you can win a national title within 2 or 3 years. And so he, more than anybody, has a big decision to make, regardless of how big that check is from MSU or anybody else.
So, Brian, there's a lot of different buzz that's going on here. Obviously, Kalani Sitake has got himself into a kind of a high-profile name here in the West for some of these head coaching positions that are open. Give me an idea of what USC or Washington could offer a coach like Kalani, who's at his school that he played for, and they're going to be moving Big 12, but we know that BYU doesn't spend big dollars. What kind of contract numbers could we see from a USC or a Washington throwing at Kalani Sitake?
Yeah, I think both schools are prepared to open up the wallets and certainly pay, you know, in the range or over. In the case of USC, over $5 million for the right candidate. I think that's almost kind of the going rate now for some of these big-time jobs is at least $5 million a year. I think that's probably where Washington would end up starting, but I think USC, I think they're comfortable paying even 7 or 8, depending on how much and who the coach ultimately is in that search, if they want to land the right guy. And I think more than anything, what those two programs would be able to offer that, frankly, BYU, they can make adjustments here or there, but the breadth of offerings that these schools can bring in terms of facilities, in terms of, off the field analysts, recruiting staffers, social media people. I mean, we just saw, this week, the Division I Council kind of opening up some of the rules related to sending gifts and sending, phone calls and text messages to groups. You need staffers to kind of help you out with that sort of stuff. There's only, 24 hours in a day, and these coaches do want to get home and see their families at times. So, ultimately, I think that matters. I think that matters to a lot of coaches that, where's the commitment, not just in terms of my contract, but in terms of the entire program. And I think it's something we're seeing Miami kind of have a reckoning with. We're seeing others, certainly with Michigan State and the offer they're making to Mel Tucker on and off the field. So that is kind of one of the bigger driving forces, not just for Kalani Sitake at BYU and where he might look elsewhere, but for a lot of these programs looking to hire coaches. It's not just about that final salary for the big guy. It's the staffing salaries. It's the commitment to the program. And I think that's going to be a sticking point as we get into the coaching carousel even thicker in the next couple of weeks.
Interesting situation across the NFL as Antonio Brown may have had himself a falsified COVID card. Do you buy this? Because it does seem like something that could be up his alley. And how upset would the NFL be if this actually did happen?
Oh, I think they'd be furious. Not just because it is who it is, but I think that the fact that somebody was trying to pull a fast one, and we've already seen this an example in sports happen. There was an NHL player that was doing the same thing, and I think ultimately this is a contributing factor, and on top of the fact that we've seen some rising case counts. The NFL is tightening up a lot of their protocols. From a weekly basis, I think that's going to continue as we kind of get into the thick of things coming out of the Halloween holiday and into kind of the holiday season with families out and about. This is still a threat to a lot of folks, especially those that are unvaccinated in the league. And I think ultimately the NFL and these teams are taking things seriously. I don't think the commissioner will look too kindly if ultimately this ends up being proven true. But I think at the end of the day, there's going to be an investigation. Everybody's going to kind of take their time, take a breath. Anthony Brown has certainly said, I would fully vaccinate. Here's my card, and said this is a false story. But at the end of the day, they're definitely going to investigate, and I would imagine they will come down very hard if ultimately this is proven true.
Appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and let's do it again next week.
Absolutely, sounds good.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Fisher, Athlon Sports, joins us weekly right here on the Zone Sports Network. Hans and Scotty, thanks for making this part of your day. Coming up next, we spin the wheel, a little sports roulette straight ahead right here on the Zone Sports Network.
This is DJ and PK. Joined now by former BYU wide receiver Dylan Cauley. Kalani getting asked about his interest in other schools and saying, I'm just getting ready for Georgia Southern. When you heard that, what did you think? Part of the game, or it meant something about his potential interest in USC and Washington jobs?
I think a little bit of both. I know from very personal experience, there is no one who loves BYU football more than Kalani. To sit here and say that there is no chance that he's thinking about taking those jobs or considering those jobs, I think would be naive. I do genuinely believe that he is able to focus in on the next few games, probably with a sense of confidence that he could get those jobs. There is a lot of thought that goes into that, and that's why I think I'm glad I'm not in that situation.
Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 till 10 on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. It's time to spin the wheel and talk some sports. This is another edition of Sports Roulette with Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Another edition of Sports Roulette right here on 97.5, 1280 The Zone and the Zone Sports Network. Sports Roulette brought to you by Davis Vision as their Black Friday sale going on all month long where you can save $1,400 off LASIK. All you have to do is call 801-253-3080. That's 801-253-3080. You can check them out at davisvisionmd.com. I'm here on the campus of Coastal Carolina at the Myrtle Beach Invitational. And Hans, you know, the whole Southern hospitality thing, I know you lived in New Orleans for a while, and I spent some time in North Carolina. It's a very real thing.
It's like, the best.
It really is. So, So they're, where I was broadcasting from, Indiana State, their broadcast crew needed to come in and take that spot because they're about ready to tip off against Oklahoma. So I had to leave my spot. And so I'm like, well, I got to do the show from somewhere. And we're able to, with the equipment we have, I can connect via LTE. So I came over in a spot where I'm not supposed to be, where the scouts and the participating coaches can come in and scout their next opponents. And I just parked right here and thought, well, geez, I only have about an hour or so of the show. So, you know, it'll be fine. Nobody will say anything. Well, two dudes just during the commercial break, security guys came up and I'm like, oh boy, we got a problem. And I'm like, I'm going to have to do like the last half hour of the show from the car.
Two security guys just came up to you?
Yeah, during the break.
Were they trying to chest up or were they trying to act tough? No.
So I'm thinking I got a problem and I'm going to have to find another place or
have to handle
it. Into this thing. And they're like, hey, are you doing a radio show? I'm like, yeah, I'm doing my show back in Salt Lake. Like, well, we've seen guys with those equipment. They can be a little rough when you connect that way. Do you want us to run you a hard line?
The security guy said that.
Yeah.
And would you like any etouffee? We could get you some Alfredo or etouffee if you're hungry.
I'm like, hey, no, I just got 30 minutes left. I'll be fine. They're like, okay, well, let us know what we can do to help you out.
Man, I love the South. I love Louisiana. I get to go back to Shreveport to call that Independence Bowl, and I cannot wait. I haven't been back to Louisiana since the Sugar Bowl in 2008, and I've never loved a place more than I've loved New Orleans and Louisiana. Because of that very thing, Scotty, they're so hospitable, and they are just – they're beautiful souls, man.
Yeah.
Here you're thinking two security guards are going to come bump you out of a spot, and they're offering to run a hard wire and get you some food.
They didn't want
I love
any of that.
That
noise. They didn't want any of that
noise
from
know.
Scotty.
Yeah, well.
He would have mad-dogged them.
That's the thing, Scotty. They might have walked up on you and saw your shoulder width and thought to themselves, you know what, we're better served by just helping this
that
guy.
That man looks like a pit bull.
I guess you didn't run into the greenbackers.
Yeah. What did you say, Coach?
I guess you didn't run into the greenbackers.
The greenbackers?
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now,
those guys are not hospitable.
They'll throw you out.
I watched them in action.
Oh, did you really?
Oh yeah.
They'll get you, huh?
Yeah.
So Scotty, so you're okay? You're in a better place. Things are good.
Things are good. No complaints whatsoever. We're good.
Awesome, man.
So, well, let's get to it. Lloyd, fire up that wheel.
Rudy Gay.
Well, Scotty, what did you think of the debut of the new forward with the Utah Jazz? He went 5-6 from three, 20 points, threw in, I think, 6 rebounds, couple of assists, had some great defensive looks and moments, closed out well, rotated into help defense, made things uncomfortable. I don't – like Lloyd said to start the show, Rudy might have wanted to start a little slower to give him room to grow. But
well, yeah, That's like his line in the postgame. He's like, "Hey guys, don't get used to this. Like this is a little out of the ordinary." But you do see what he brings, Hans, and you're spot on. Like, that analysis is what Rudy Gay brings to this team. Now, he is 16 years in the league, and he's got a little bit of tread left on those tires, but you can get that from him every now and then. And it was good to see, as Jazz fans have waited all season for this to happen, he gets up on the court, and, boy, he blows up in a big way.
And the Utah Jazz get a 119-103 win over Toronto. Toronto kept it close in the second half, in the first half. And then in the second half, specifically the third quarter, felt like the Jazz really outpaced them. And, you know, that's a Toronto team, Scotty. I know that they're down on their luck a little bit. They were coming into this game on a losing streak. But still, you saw some of the names on the court. Van Vliet, Pascal. You know, you see those names on the court that they can engage. At any moment, they can start hitting from the perimeter. You know that team can hit from the perimeter. And you know that's the best offensive rebounding team in the NBA, getting themselves second-chance opportunities. And the Jazz shut the door on them. In almost every area in the second half specifically, shut the door on them. And it was nice to see Rudy Gay get on the court, do what he did. Nice to see Rudy Gobert still feeling very engaged offensively and very engaged in the season. And you still have everybody else that can help and hit from the perimeter. Bojan Bogdanović looking good. And, Scotty, I got to mention this. I applauded Lloyd earlier, but both you and Lloyd. So we're two games through the eight-game bet. You remember the eight-game bet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You set the line at 35.5% from three because the Utah Jazz have struggled from three. And you set the line at 35.5 through the next eight games. Well, they've got 42.1% under their belt against the 76ers and 41.3% under their belt for the Raptors. So you and Lloyd are off to a screaming start.
Keep it rolling, baby.
Yeah.
And, you know, you shoot like that, Lloyd and I might – we could absorb a rough shooting night and still be where we need to be. So, that's a good sign. Look, you knew it was going to get better. I don't think we anticipated it get better this quickly and to this degree. It'll come back down to earth a little bit, but it just shows you what this team's certainly capable of when they've got it dialed in, for sure. All right, Lloyd, spin it.
Big day for a former Ute.
Big day indeed for former Ute wide receiver Tim Patrick. Now, going through his dealt with all kinds of injuries at the University of Utah. He was undrafted. He was cut from the NFL three times. Well, today, Hans, and I have not seen the numbers on this, but apparently has signed a three-year extension with the Broncos. And in a lot of bad football that I've seen with the Broncos as of late, Tim Patrick has been a bright spot. He never drops a pass. He comes up with clutch catches more often than not. And he has been the fact that he has had a bunch of Joe Schmuckatellis throwing him the football, and he's been able to do what he's done in the NFL after being cut three times and having a bit of a lackluster career in college due to the injuries. Huge congrats to him. He did it the hard way, and he's found a way to make it work for him.
So how has he done this without a quarterback throwing to him?
I have no idea, honestly. I have no idea. That makes it even more valuable, honestly.
Right. Yeah, that was my thought. It's, you know, you see some of these receivers fight through the odds of who's throwing the ball or who's protecting the quarterback to allow the quarterback to throw the ball. You know, quite frankly, the wide receiver is more affected by other people doing their job than anybody else on the field. I feel like a running back can just get a ball handed off to him and go do work. You know, that receiver relies on the offensive line to set the pocket, give him time, and then they rely on the quarterback to deliver the route on time in the cut or on stride so that they can get a little bit of yards after catch. Like, and Tim Patrick hasn't had a lot of that help on any of those fronts, and he's done what he's done. So
yeah,
that's really impressive. Scotty, I do have one more headline if you've got time.
Yeah, let's do it.
Utah lands a big one.
You know, this is a great signing for the University of Utah, and BYU has definitely grabbed a lot of momentum in recruiting. But Utah today got a commitment from Carson Tabaraki, who is a Park City linebacker. He's a star athlete here in the state of Utah. And Trevor Allen of KSLSports.com put out a really good piece that kind of talks about what Carson does well, how he was respected in the country. Scotty, he's rated as the 37th ranked athlete in the country by 24/7 Sports.
Wow.
That's, yeah, 37th ranked athlete in the country, and he has committed to the University of Utah. So, you know, we see these recruiting tides go back and forth. We see the battles. This is a kid that had offers from Notre Dame, USC, Michigan, Nebraska, Ohio State, Oklahoma State, Oregon. This is a big-time recruit here in the state of Utah, playing in Park City, a great linebacker, and Utah is able to keep him in the state. I love seeing kids stay in the state. I don't care whether it's Utah State. I don't even care if it's Southern Utah, BYU, or Utah. I love seeing our young kids stay in the state, but this is a really good get for the University of Utah.
Yeah.
You remember you said that when Rock's time comes, okay?
No, Rock is, by the time his time comes, he's going to be run out of the state. People are going to be like, get him out.
At least you can take Texas Tech off the board there. At least you don't have to worry about Lubbock.
Yeah.
Oh, that made me sad.
Yeah, I know. That bummed me out. That bummed me out. He had his little heart set on it.
I know, right?
It'll be interesting when all that stuff, or if that stuff pops up. I hate that kid has to deal with so many pressures. It's not fair to him, but.
Well, that's going to be an interesting time for the show, for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is. We're going to have to navigate that one together, Scotty.
Hey, should we make it a road trip and take him on a recruiting visit?
Can me and Lloyd come on the recruiting trip with him, please?
As long as he's not alone. You know what? No, I'm not going to send you guys with him.
No, I mean all three. It's assuming three you went, too. Yeah, no, I'm just assuming you would go.
Because
yeah.
I could see Uncle Scott and Uncle Lloyd having a little bit too fun a time.
No, okay, easy. No, it would be us, the three amigos. Come on, man. We take Rock to his visit. Maybe we do some podcasting or something like that. Life of Rock Olson.
Yeah, well, I get one text and I'm on the next flight home. Or we're driving 24 hours through the night for me to get home.
Rock's like, why do we have to be home so early?
Maybe we'll even invite Ryan Leaf.
Because we're trying to save Lloyd's marriage. That's why, Rock. We're trying to save Lloyd's marriage.
Lloyd, took that too far.
Yeah, that's an unfair shot. That's an unfair shot, bud. People don't need to know.
It was all fun and games until you took it too far.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
Those recruiting trips could be scandalous. Yeah. Luckily, none of mine
were.
That's
why I leave it to us. We'll show them how a recruiting trip really should go.
Let's get John L. Smith on the line.
Whoa. Coach Mac heard that one.
Coach Mac has a headset on, Scotty.
Okay. I think we probably ought to wrap this. It's starting to get hot in here.
We've done enough damage.
Yep.
All right. Fair enough. All right. We'll wrap things up. Get you ready for Unrivaled straight ahead. Hans and Scotty, this is 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
The new Zone lineup is here. Give it up. With the best coverage of the sports you love and the teams you can't live without. Catch DJ and PK mornings from 6 to 10, followed by Jake Scott and Ben Anderson from 10 to noon. Get your daily fix of Hans and Scotty from noon to 3. And then The Zone welcomes Unrivaled with Alex Keery and former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell to the team. Weekdays from 3 to 6, live and local. All day, every day. This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, wrapping up another edition of the show. Hans and Scotty right here on the Zone Sports Network. Hans, by the way, the number's now out on the Tim Patrick contract. 3 years, $30 million, 18 of which is guaranteed. So props to him. Congrats.
Wow.
It's a nice contract and certainly a very, very well-deserved contract.
Man, they've paid Bowles and Patrick.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money they've handed over to Utah players.
Huh? And Scotty was only mad about one of those.
No, I had no issues with the Bulls earned his contract.
Remember, Scotty did come on air and apologized.
Yeah, no, because he turned it around. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That one season.
You got to admit, Bulls really did turn things around.
Oh, like, one of the craziest. Denver didn't pick up his option. They could have had another year of him on the cheap. But they said, no, we don't, you know, we're not picking up his option. So he hit free agency a year early and bet on himself, and he was lights out. In fact, if I were Bulls, honestly, I would have given the middle finger to the Broncos and tested the free agent market.
No question.
You remember the text messages Scotty used to send us about Bulls?
Yeah.
Jeez, man.
Yeah. But
it was uncomfortable.
Remember, we agreed to keep those private.
Yeah, I said a lot of things in those text messages that Lloyd says in front of his kids.
Whoa! You go too far.
And now his kids say them when they get upset.
No, yeah. They – okay, stop.
Hey, really quick, NFL weekend. Do we get some rebounding going on around the three of us here? Did they get back? I know.
Who do your Browns have?
I know that they are bringing Nick Chubb back. I know Chubb's going to be back on the field, finally. It feels like he's been off the field for forever, so maybe that gives them a shot. But, you know, I think that it's a pretty decent matchup. It's going to be against the Ravens, I believe, on Sunday Night Football.
Oh, yeah, you're screwed.
They're in a little bit of trouble, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. Denver's got a bye, which I'm sure they'll find a way to lose somehow.
What are the Raiders doing, Lloyd?
Yeah, they got the Bengals at home. They're welcoming the Bengals.
They got the Bengals? I thought they had the Cowboys. Am I wrong?
No, that's on Thanksgiving.
Oh.
So they got a short one. They play Sunday, and then they'll have a few days before they play the Cowboys.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Actually, you know what? I think Cleveland plays Baltimore on Thanksgiving weekend. So there must be Detroit this weekend. Because I think that they got the Ravens on Thanksgiving.
Well, then you'll be all right there. You'll be Detroit.
I don't know, bud. We'll see.
Has Detroit won a game yet?
No. Lloyd?
Are they gonna go 0-16 or 0-17 again?
I thought they did. Did they not win one at all?
No. Not that I know of. I think they're 0-8. So that means the Browns will, in fact, lose to the Lions because that's just
you can't, how things are. Yeah, Detroit can't have that record again.
There's a good chance that they go without a win this year.
And did that happen to them like 4 or 5 years ago? They went 0-16?
Yeah, they're the most recent team.
First team in NFL history to do it?
Yep. Yep, not a good situation.
Detroit, 0-8. Yep. Well, they're 0-8-1.
I was going to say, they got a tie.
They got the tie in there.
That still goes without the win, right?
I would think so, yeah. I mean, it's not quite as... instead of going 0-16, they're going to go 0-16-1.
That's still
get
pretty
rid ugly. Of the ties, by the way. You can't
agree.
Have ties in the NFL.
I fully agree.
This isn't soccer.
Okay. All right. Well, no, this is a good question here though, Hans. But as a former NFL player, they wanted to cut the overtime from 15 to 10 minutes because they don't want they don't want guys getting hurt and more opportunities to get them hurt. So you're conceding. I mean, essentially that could be two or three possessions. Combined possessions, and it's pretty easy to go scoreless on those, so you're going to get more ties. So is there a better way to do it so you avoid the ties without putting players at risk?
I know that has been a tough call for the NFL, and I know it's a concern extending those minutes, but the embarrassment of having a tie on a team's record is it's just a horrible way. And there's a part of me that hates gimmicky finishes. Like, I hate the shootouts. You know, yeah. I hate the penalty kicks. I hate those things in hockey and soccer where you play this hard-fought game and then it's like, all right, who can stop a puck?
Yeah.
Or, all right, who can stop one kick? It's kind of a horrible way to finish it, but at least it draws a conclusion. You need a conclusion. There's got to be a way that they can do that. Scott, if you get through a full quarter of regulation, you know, putting a team multiple times and going back and forth from the 8-yard line or the 7-yard line or something and just seeing who scores the most out of 4 opportunities. I don't know. There's got to be some way to
finish
it.
You don't like the gimmicks, but you get 2 chances or whatever.
I know.
You get 2 chances, and guess what? Then it turns into maybe a kickoff.
No, we're not doing field goals.
25 yards. No, you go, keep going until somebody misses.
Not going field goals to decide overtime.
Yeah, we're not letting the kickers decide this thing.
Not a chance. Not a chance. But somehow they got to figure this out. College football, I get it. You don't want to extend these guys. You did extend them an extra game. You don't want to put them extra minutes on the field. But there's got to be a way to straighten that out.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Make it a coin flip.
Hey, Scotty. Enjoy this football weekend, man. I can't wait. We're going to be kicking off Utah pre- and post-game coverage. We've got BYU pre- and post-game coverage. I'll be on both of those. I know that you've got games coming up this weekend, and I know that you're going to be busy, but it's always fun to have the biggest game in the country right here in the state of Utah with number three, Oregon, taking on Utah that – a Utah team that has completely found themselves. And, Scotty, you say they win. I say Utah wins. Yep. Lloyd, you say Utah wins. Do you realize when the three of us have picked a team to win, do you realize when all three of us agreed, in the 8 years we've been together on air, we have never missed?
Okay, they're going to win.
I don't know if that's a fact, Coach Mack.
Is that a fact?
Coach Mack is looking at me like I'm crazy.
I don't know if you want to fact check that one.
Hey, guys. We are undefeated on
the parlays.
Our parlay picks for the for the entire year.
That is true. All two of them.
Well, yeah, we've had two. No, it's not funny, Coach Mac. Yeah, we've had two, but we've.
You're doing all your parlay picks. That's really
good.
That's good.
Come on, dude.
Well, we
2-0, Coach.
Yeah, we've picked two parlays, the three of us, and we have not missed yet
Nailed
this
them.
Year.
Okay, who did you, which game?
It was so long ago, I don't even remember.
Oh, yeah, what?
It was.
It was a long time ago, yeah, I have no memory.
It was going back a long time. But Coach Mack, three of us thinking Utah gets the win over number three, Oregon. We're not off, are we?
Well, it's going to be interesting because I was at Utah's practice this week.
Oh, here we go.
Tavian Thomas is back.
Well, maybe.
You watch. Coach isn't going to give us the goods. He's going to save it for the next guys.
I know. Coach Mack doesn't want to tip his hand.
Come on, Coach. I can see it. You're trying to hold back on us.
There's going to be two or three changes.
Lloyd, you get the board. I'll get the water. We're going to get this information out of Coach Mack. This is going to happen. Did you say there's going to be a few changes?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, hopefully the way they punt the ball is one of them.
Well,
yeah. Like they'll actually get the punt off this time?
I tell you what, they came out of the Arizona game, and it was kind of a wake-up call for them because they expected to go down there and demolish Arizona. And Arizona gave them all they wanted and more. The best game Arizona's played probably in the last 3 years. And so they were a little bit humbled by that game. You know, just to talk it to the players. And so
we'll see.
So the difference this week than last week is that, including the coaches, everybody was quiet. You know, they weren't like a week ago, everything was upbeat, everybody was energized, everybody was moving, but this week it was quieter. Ooh. Including the coaching staff and the players. And what a lot of conversation. Just guys,
that can be good.
Yeah, what can be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes you worry that maybe they're a little tight.
Yeah, they can be tight, but that can be really good.
Because I think that after they watched their Arizona film, they probably ripped some players, you know.
Yeah.
And you know.
Especially on the defensive side.
Yeah, and then to have two punts blocked in a year, you know, which is
for touchdowns,
and then having a return kick against Weber, so that's three.
Yeah, and having missed field goals.
Yeah, and missed field goals. So you worry about, okay, what's going to happen in key situations, mm-hmm. And I love the personality of this team, and these. They're very efficient. They're very tough guys, but I worry maybe they're a little tight, you know, because they all know what if they're looking at this game, maybe the biggest game that they've played in mm-hmm. the last in a long time, you know. And so you worry that they may be a little tight, and so we'll see. So well,
Coach Mack, we're going to be listening. I know you got some time with these guys. I'm going to be listening into that insight.
Okay.
So you bring it hard for us.
Okay.
All right, Coach.
Hey, where's Scotty G? What time is he in?
I'm in South Carolina, Coach.
I thought you said Louisiana.
That was me.
No, South, oh, you're was, Louisiana.
Yeah, Louisiana.
Oh, yeah. South Carolina.
You ever been to Coastal Carolina University?
No. What's it like?
It's beautiful. Beautiful campus.
Really?
Incredible. Yeah, absolutely.
That guy's that guy did a great job there in football a couple years ago.
Yeah. Last year, and he's still there. They're not quite as good as they were last year, but still a pretty good team.
You could go. Yeah. How close are you to Charlotte?
Pretty far. That's on the other side of the state.
Oh, it is? Okay. Because I was going to send you to my favorite restaurant over there, you know, which is Hall's Steakhouse, which is the best restaurant in South Carolina.
They put some good steak on the table, huh?
Yeah, the best.
Well, Coach Mack, thanks for coming in, man. Appreciate you.
Well, I was only an hour early. It's all right. I mean, when I walk in here and I'm looking around, I'm saying, where's my guys at? And I see you.
Yeah.
I don't see Scotty G.
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying.
Well, I just mean Coach is going to put an extra hour on that invoice, too.
Well, okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I will. Let's see how you're going to react to that, Scotty.
we'll get you paid in March.
Yeah, maybe in April. Hey, by the way,
it's going to delay things.
I spent that extra hour. What about that? Oh, that doesn't count.
Unrivaled coming up next. It's a Football Friday. It's Ron McBride in the house. You're listening to 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
This is Unrivaled.
You guys are doing a hell of a job.
What are the odds that Mark Harlan calls Kalani to just...